Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time.
That's what I find to be really frustrating about elimination protocols. And we can have all the science, but we're human beings. And I think a lot of times the science completely negates how emotional our relationship is with food. Definitely. I feel like that is often, first of all, it's not always able to be tested, right? But also at the same time, I feel like that's a huge component that's just left out. And we're not machines, although we work like a machine. There's other aspects that play a huge role in how food works in our body.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's often ignored in research and in practice.
Yeah, definitely.
Myself included. I used to do that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I did too. But we can only say that because we've been there and now we know to come out on the other side. Okay, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. So let's back up a little bit here. This week's episode is all about elimination diets, the therapeutic way in which some of them are designed, and then the different ways that they're actually put into practice. Some of them, which may be intended for healing the body, especially in terms of things like the autoimmune protocol, but which may actually end up hurting your relationship with food in a way that makes you more stuck in the diet cycle and controlling patterns with food and your body. So this week's guest, if you didn't recognize her voice, is Christina Hoyt Alvarez, who is a nutritionist out of Philadelphia and one of my closest friends who I went to grad school with. So Christina was first on episode 3 of the podcast, so way back at the beginning when we talked all about diet culture, and then episodes 15 and 16 where we talked about metabolic damage and what happens to your body when you put it in starvation or survival mode, usually from overstressing about everything in your life, undereating, and overexercising. So Christina and I, in everything that we've been doing and everything that we're going to be doing going forward, we are nutritionists and health coaches, and we come from a background in evidence-based nutrition science. But at the same time, we're also approaching it with a lens of anti-diets and trying to fix your relationship with food. So keeping that in mind, when we're talking about elimination diets and therapeutic healing protocols today, it is from that lens. If you're considering doing an elimination diet, maybe you're doing one in January, or maybe you've done one in the past, for whatever reason, what we want you to get out of this episode is that we want you to dig deep and examine your why and your intentions behind making the decision to do that protocol. Because if you come at it from a certain angle, without the help of a practitioner or multiple practitioners, something that was designed to help heal your body and certain symptoms you may be having may actually end up having adverse effects that can take months and years to get out of. So we're giving you patterns and red flags to look for that may indicate that you might not be in the right place to take on one of these therapeutic protocols, especially not without the help of a licensed practitioner, even if you do have a medical or therapeutic need to do one of these protocols. And, which this usually happens, but Christina and I actually ended up talking for so long that we're going to split this into a two-part episode. So we're going Harry Potter style. You can either go movie 7 and 8, or you can choose to be Harry Potter and the Cursed Child style and divide it into two parts. But the good news is you don't have to pay hundreds of dollars or travel to New York City or London to listen. You just have to wait until next week to hear the second part of the episode. So without any more delaying, let's get started. But I think what we should do to start off, before we even start talking about are you ready for an elimination diet, what elimination diets are, and the problems that a lot of people run into them with, is you haven't been on the podcast since like episode 16,
what?
Which was like last March or February.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell people what's been going on in your life since then?
Okay, well, last March, I was pregnant, right? I was in my first trimester when that came out. So now I have a little baby. I had awful morning sickness, but that's okay. I survived. And now I am working one-on-one with my clients. I'm chatting pretty hardcore anti-diet culture from a clinical nutritionist perspective, which is fun and really interesting, and I get jazzed up about. But that's basically all that's going on with me. Baby, nutrition,
And you finished grad school.
anti-diet. And I finished grad school. Yeah, I did. I graduated. Yay me.
Yeah,
Oh, and
you did
today's my
it.
birthday, so there's that
Oh
too.
my God. I
I'm
knew that because
officially
it came up on my phone and I forgot it, even though I texted you first thing this morning before I hit the snooze button.
I'm officially in my mid-30s.
Oh my
It's
gosh.
happened. I'm 34. So that also happened. And you know what? It's funny. I was talking to my mom about turning 34, and I'm pretty stoked about it, actually. I do feel older this year, but I think that's more of having a child
Yeah,
and
I
the
think,
responsibility of motherhood than
yep.
it is my age.
I'm pretty sure that's a valid concern.
So that's me. That's everything that's happened with me, honestly. A lot of it was baby focused and then working with my clients and then really like honing in more about how much I feel, because I throughout this past year I've worked more and more with people who have diagnosed eating disorders or undiagnosed eating disorders and unhealthy relationship with dieting and their food and their body. And it just naturally they started coming to me talking about this stuff. And so I had to figure out a way to help them heal without triggering their eating disorders. So that has been what I've been up to, business side and
Yeah, I
practice.
think it's been really interesting for both of us coming from a background of having celiac that when we started off in school, like way back when we did integrative nutrition together, and like all the way through grad school and now in clinical practice, like our starting focus was healing with food and primarily doing like a lot of gut health and then elimination diets and stuff. But I think it's a very natural progression. Like if you start doing that for a really long time, you start to see the different ways that people abuse elimination diets and how it can kind of lead to being further stuck in this diet cycle and this all or nothing foods mentality. Because, I mean, one of the things that we both do is we work with people who have a history of an eating disorder or disordered eating, which then, because of that, a lot of the time have now developed these gut issues. So you kind of have these two polar opposites of like, okay, so someone who has a history of disordered eating needs to work on the, accepting all foods as not having morality and all foods are available and being okay with foods and not controlling food. But then on the other side of things, like to do a true healing elimination diet, especially if you have an imbalance of gut bacteria or an overgrowth of bacteria, you need to eliminate certain foods in order to starve off those bacteria or restore the balance or get rid of parasites or whatever it is. So it's like this really hard back and forth of how can we meet in the middle? So if we do decide to do an elimination diet, it's not going to exacerbate and make worse these patterns that are from the disordered eating past. But at the same time, some of these people are so miserable in their gut symptoms that they need to do something.
Yeah. So these are the types of people that would come to me, and this is kind of where I fell in, and I felt a very moral obligation to maintain and support their healing through their eating disorder, especially when I had clients who were currently seeing therapists. So I had to have conversations. I even talked to some of their therapists that I had dialogue with them, and I had to be really open and honest with my clients and say, "You need to tell me if something that I've said is triggering for you, or how we're gonna to work through this." So, but we had to give them something to start feeling physically better, all at the same time. And this is kind of where I fell into this kind of rhythm of helping those types of people, because we know that they have. I knew that they had physical symptoms because they would tell me, "This is what's going on physically in my body. This is how I'm feeling." But at the same time, I have this history and I can't do, I've done low, like they'd come to me and say, I've done low carb and I felt pretty good, blah, 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 but I don't want to do that again because it always comes down to weight. And so we had to take weight out of it. So a big thing for me in working with them through this is taking weight out of it. In fact, I don't even have a scale in my office. I don't even ask my clients for their weight. I could care less what their weight is. And I don't take measurements, which is pretty unique in the clinical nutrition field as well. Like that would be kind of poo-pooed against to not have that information.
Yeah, I remember getting a lot of flack for that in clinic at school because I never took anyone's measurements. We had to take people's weight, but I just had them turn around on the scale. Like I never asked them what their weight was. I never asked them what their calorie count was or macros or anything like that. And all of those things are forms that you fill out in the like nutrition questionnaire in the beginning of the clinic. Oh man, the days.
I know those forms were intense, but the thing is, and then it pumped out like the BMI and then people would see that and it literally would have next to it like obese stage 3. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and it would come up. And that, I mean, I didn't want to show anybody that because, God, if I went on there, I probably would say obese on there for being fully, like, or overweight. It would say something because my BMI is higher than what my height-to-weight ratio should be. Mm-hmm. My gravitational, quote-unquote, should be. My gravitational pull. It's a little too much, I guess, according to this scientist. I feel pretty good, though. So, so I wouldn't do that. But I felt like that was kind of an interesting approach, and you do it too. So I know that we had, this is what we have in common, but I felt like it was a moral obligation because I see eating disorders as so serious and I feel so connected to the women who have, and men who have gone through the therapy and the emotional stages to get to the point to ask for help. And then get to the point in their recovery to be able to say, okay, now I have a better relationship where I can even start to discuss food.
Yep.
That to me is an like hands down, like praise hands style, like to them, because that takes a lot of work.
Well, yeah, because you first have to realize that what you're doing is a pattern that is not advantageous to your health, and you have to first recognize it and then be able to admit it to yourself, and then being able to admit it to someone else and actually ask for help and say, I can't do this alone, when eating disorders at their root are such a mechanism of trying to control something when you feel like circumstances are out of your control. And so in a sense, you've already made a lot of progress because you are giving up some of that control and saying, I can't do this all myself and I need your help.
Yeah. And also too, it's like they want to navigate how they can feel better physically at the same time while not triggering in doing diets. And it's hard. It's, I have such strong levels of empathy because how do you do that in a healing environment when you are consistently bombarded with diets and diet culture and people saying and quoting research on how this one is the best one and it's therapeutic? How do you navigate that without having 4 years of school in nutrition like we do, or more plus that we have? You know, like, how do you do that? How do you do that as someone who's coming in and not get re-triggered and fall back into an old pattern? How do you do that? I don't know how you would even begin to do that. So the fact that they're coming and asking for guidance, I'm really happy that I get to help them through it. It's really like really fun for me, and I find them to be really inspiring, and hats off, man. They're always awesome when they come in. So that's kind of how we fell into this, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so the main thing that we're going to be talking about today is elimination diets and whether you are really ready for them from the lens of coming from like an anti-diet, trying to heal your relationship with food and your body perspective, basically.
Yeah.
So at the root of it. Would you care to explain what is even an elimination diet?
Oh, God. Well, there's, as we were kind of discussing earlier, there's kind of like two types in so many ways, and I'll, you know, we can elaborate more, but they're used in different ways. So there's a true, I find, a true elimination diet, the way that I look at it, is to identify foods that are potentially perpetuating a health diagnosis that you have. That's how I look at it. And that can be therapeutic in healing some of those diagnoses that we know that we can use nutrition to heal. And this is from a clinical perspective. Like when I think of myself and autoimmune diseases, or people who have multiple autoimmune diseases, something like the AIP is an elimination protocol that is designed specifically for therapeutic reasons for that. And it's used therapeutically, and it's used by physicians that way. There's also like the mitochondria protocol, which is designed for people who have MS, you know, and other kind of neurological diseases and health things as well. Then you can fall into, I think, the gray area where you're hearing about elimination protocols that are more designed to figure out what foods might be triggering for you. That's where I find it to fall into this a little bit of a gray area, although it can be designed for very specific therapeutic purposes. Those are the ones that I tend to find can be abused. Although hands up, myself included, I have abused the AIP diet in the past. So I know that they can be, and I've seen it in practice being overly used as like kind of like the be-all and end-all for being like, oh, you have an autoimmune? Here you go. Like, this is what you need to do. Here's your pill. Blah. Take this protocol, set forth, conquer, you know? And like that, to me, here's your pill. So true. I say that to my clients all the time. It's too prescriptive. If I'm only looking at it and saying, okay, you have this disease, you need, or this diagnosis, or this chronic illness, or what have you, or these quote unquote symptoms, you fall into this camp, and therefore you have to do this protocol. That to me is just the same as saying, oh, you have heart disease. Oh, here's Lipitor. Like, yeah. You know, to me, it's the same thing. Because it's taking out the individualized aspect of it. And, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, nightshades, for instance. You were saying earlier about how nightshades are really great to remove for someone who has rheumatoid arthritis. But for us with celiac disease, we don't need to remove nightshades necessarily. So even taking something like an AIP diet, there's nuances to it, and it doesn't have to be all or nothing and still be therapeutic. So I think I've rambled a little bit on the definitions of elimination protocols. I don't know if I did, but in conclusion, if this is my thesis, there's two types. One that's used truly for therapeutic reasons in order to, that goes alongside a physical diagnosis that's happening. And then two, the ones that are more triggered, more designed towards triggering foods and reducing overall inflammation. Like, we don't know what's going on, but there's something going on here. I'm not feeling great, so we're going to do these eliminations. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it.
And I will say the second type, when we're trying to figure out the triggering foods or foods that are causing me sensitivities or stuff like that, I feel like this one we see more of the time. There is an underlying motivation of weight loss.
Yes.
And the fear of gaining weight. And I will say also, a lot of these elimination diets, you know, from everything from keto to paleo to vegan, vegetarian, Whole30, mitochondria, whatever, all these things, although I guess mitochondria diet is more therapeutically used. A lot of people don't necessarily have food sensitivities, but because elimination diets has become such a buzzword and like so popular in the way that new diets are designed these days, everyone thinks that they have food sensitivities. Like,
oh, yeah.
Not everyone has them, you know? So I got a lot of questions last week that were like, well, how do you recommend we find out our food sensitivities if we're not doing, you know, this elimination diet? Well, first, it's worth saying, like, not everyone has them, you know? Like, if you don't have a lot of symptoms going on, if you don't think you have a lot of inflammation, if you don't have an autoimmune disease or medical condition, you might not need to do an elimination diet.
And here's a question, but my thought, so put it this way, I'm going to lay it on there, but if you were to look at all of those quote unquote elimination protocols that are designed to identify what foods might be triggering for you, there is one major thing that all of them have in common, is that they remove highly processed, refined foods. That alone, those foods alone can cause GI issues, stomach upset, rosacea, eczema,
brain
fog, sleep issues, energy lags, like all of those things. So you think it like kind of gives this like Wizard of Oz, like the Wonderful Powerful Oz type mentality that this is the way and it's food sensitivities, when really it's just we're not eating enough real freaking food.
Yeah.
And if you start to eat real freaking food, most of those things all just magically disappear. Mm-hmm. And then having a freaking cupcake every now and again, or literally every day you can have a cupcake and you'll be fine.
Yep.
It's not going to ruin your life.
Yeah.
Because you've created this relationship with food that you're no longer, I don't even know how to describe it, but you're no longer putting them into this category of like that you have to remove all of these things or I'm sensitive to all of these foods. 99% of the time in all of the clients that I work with, we never even do an elimination protocol and they feel better.
Mm-hmm.
90% of their symptoms go away. And it's not until we get to the end where you can say, all right, there's still some stuff going on. I still have some, like, let's say like joint issues or something else is going on here. Like, okay, let's play around with some of the things that we know through research that might be contributing to that. And we can see then if it is, because if you go, I just feel like elimination protocols go too strong, too fast. And you don't really know, as much as they're designed to figure out what is causing what, you really don't figure out what's causing what because you've removed literally everything. So you have no idea if it was just the incorporation of real whole foods that made a big difference to you, or if it was specific dairy or specifically gluten.
Right. Or nightshades or whatever.
Or nightshades. It's really hard to then figure it out.
Yeah. Because, I mean, another commonality with all of these elimination diets, right, is there is a yes list and there is a no list. And there's a different motivation in every protocol for what their yes foods are and what their no foods are. And there are a few problems with this, is that if you're not working with a practitioner that knows your medical history, your health history, if you have any kind of history of disordered eating, if you're not working with a practitioner, it's really hard to figure out exactly which foods are going to be triggering for you, because if you don't have any kind of help, how do you know how to do a true re-inoculating or reintroducing these foods in a way that might be triggering for your specific symptoms? You know, like we were talking about rheumatoid arthritis before, if you don't have any kind of background or training in nutrition, you might not know that one of the first things that we go to is removing nightshades to remove inflammation, because there's a lot of research that says that the compounds in nightshades can cause joint pain and inflammation around the joints. But if you have another kind of autoimmune disease, or if you're just trying to figure out your sensitivities, you probably wouldn't test nightshades first. You know, and then there's also this danger of, because there is a yes, no foods list, even if it's designed in a therapeutic kind of manner, you run into the danger, especially if you have any kind of history of disordered eating or controlling your food or falling into an all or nothing kind of mentality, is how do you get out of the elimination protocol or the yes, no foods list when really, if you start doing this protocol and you start feeling a lot better and you've eliminated a lot of foods and you're not sure which ones they are and added in a lot of real foods as well, like how do you not start to think that the foods that you have eliminated are bad? Or how do you not start to think that all of them are inflammatory to you because you don't know? And then some people start to fear reintroducing these foods because they think that this is the only reason that they're feeling better is because they've eliminated all of these foods. And then, like we were saying before, a lot of people associate weight loss with success, even if they didn't go into the protocol, like a therapeutic protocol trying to lose weight. And unless you're severely underweight because of your condition, a lot of people would say that if I lost weight on my autoimmune protocol or whatever it was, that's a sign that this is working. But you can easily lose weight on a protocol and feel just as shitty as you did from when you started. So I think we need to stop using weight loss as a measure of success on these kinds of protocols if we're trying to approach them from a perspective of healing.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that the people aren't using it from a perspective of healing. And I think what happens too that perpetuates the issue is it kind of turns into like a game of telephone. I had success with that, with removing nightshades. So therefore my friend says, I'm not feeling very good. Oh, you should remove nightshades. That helped me. And then it's like everyone thinks they now have to, we're just using nightshades as like a thing. I think this really happened with gluten.
Yeah.
Pretty hardcore.
And carbs and sugar and you know. Fill in insert, the blank. Whatever yeah, is currently here. Being demonized.
It like then goes down the road and like everyone now thinks that this is what the answer is. And I think that happens as well. And I think that that kind of like we cling to them as kind of like the holy grail for unlocking how we're going to feel better. Mm-hmm. And it's people who are majorly susceptible to this type of messaging are the people who have either been searching for an answer for a while or have a history of disordered eating patterns. Because then they're thinking, oh, I hear about keto. Ooh, this is research-based. I don't feel that great. Let me do this, and this is going to help me with X, Y, and Z. And it might not be the right path for you. It could be the right path for certain people. But I think, like you were saying, unless you're working with a trained professional, how would you ever know that you're going down the right avenue?
Right. And a couple of disclaimers or points that we wanted to mention during this podcast is like elimination diets are not supposed to be used forever or for long periods of time, except in very specific medical circumstances, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, if you have celiac, which is an autoimmune disease in which if you eat gluten, your body literally attacks itself from your immune system. Like Christina and I can't ever eat gluten again. But aside from that, or, you know, having a true like anaphylaxis-based allergy, your throat is closing up, then you don't need to be on the autoimmune protocol or keto, or, and you definitely don't want to be on things like low FODMAP forever because, as we were saying before, if you're on a diet that is designed to starve off certain bacteria to help bring your body back into balance, by nature, you can't really select like which bacteria you're starving off and which ones you're feeding at the same time. So to use the low FODMAP diet as an example, if you're on that for too long, you're lacking the raw materials that you need to feed the bacteria in your colon, which help you poop every day. So you then might run the risk of actually depleting those bacteria so much that then if an opportunistic pathogen or bacteria comes in, you have no fertile ground in here to help fight off those guys, and you might actually end up worse in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also too, we've never really talked about this before, and I wonder, I'm curious what your thoughts are, putting you on the spot here.
But I'm ready. Bring it on.
If it's truly therapeutic, if it's truly a therapeutic protocol, wouldn't you be able to get off of it? Because it should be healing, and then you can move on from it. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel. If we're truly healing and it's truly doing that work, wouldn't it then put things into remission and then you could start to reincorporate new things? To me, if you have to be on something for the rest of your life, you know, celiac disease is like, you know, in its own category, obviously. Right. Then is it really therapeutic?
Right. I mean, the only exceptions that I could think to something like that is a progressively degenerative disease that is like not going to go away, like MS or like ALS or you know, Alzheimer's or dementia.
Yeah.
But aside from that, you should be able to get off a therapeutic protocol once you're feeling better and hopefully reintroduce foods that you enjoy that bring joy to your life that are not going to cause you a flare-up of your medical or autoimmune symptoms anymore. And I think
totally agree.
There is a lack of understanding of that because we also run into this issue, which happens with a lot of elimination diets, because a lot of people run into this all or nothing mentality with the yes and no foods and stuff, is that a lot of people, once, you know, if they try and introduce something or if they have a slip up or if they eat something that was off of their plan, they go into this like might as well mentality. And it's like, oh, I was doing the autoimmune protocol, but now I had a slice of chocolate cake that had eggs and cocoa in it at, you know, whoever's birthday. So I might as well eat all of these things and then just start all over, you know, next month or whatever it is. So people are now using elimination diets in a cyclical way, but in a like on the wagon, off the wagon sort of thing. And so they're never really seeing a true reduction or remission of their symptoms, because it's like, okay, January we're doing autoimmune protocol, and then shit, February the Super Bowl came around and I ate all these things, so the following Monday I'm just going to jump back on the autoimmune protocol. But then this is just reinforcing old patterns, and this is the danger zone that we run into, because if you don't have a plan designed by some kind of licensed professional or a nutritionist and a therapist working together, especially if you have this background, like there's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's no way out. And if you haven't been doing a protocol that is designed for you and you're not seeing a remission of your symptoms, you feel like, why should I be doing this in the first place if it's not working, you know, even after a month or two? But then you go off and you feel even worse and you're like, oh my gosh, I should just go back on. But then you're still not feeling good. So it's like this battle you have going on inside of you, and you're thinking, well, should I be on this, or should I just, you know, go back to the way things were because I was enjoying my food more and I didn't have to plan out every single thing I was eating, and it doesn't even seem like it's working that well. So you run into these really hard situations and people just going like on again, off again, whether we're talking about therapeutic protocols for like small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or keto for healing, you know, mental problems that people have, whether it's epilepsy or schizophrenia, or autism, which is what keto was designed for in the first place, or if they're using things like, you know, paleo or Whole30 or, you know, whatever it is, like just to lose weight, you know, or just to figure out their food sensitivities, people start falling into these like on again, off again every other month, which is then reinforcing the diet cycle, and they can't get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Boom.
Mic drop. Well, no, I mean, that is the cycle that we see over and over and over again. And I think the truth is that most of the time people aren't really ready for an elimination protocol, not mentally and not emotionally. They might be physically ready and like their pantry is stocked, they have the meals planned, they've, you know, pulled their foods together, all that kind of stuff. But then there's a huge mental and emotional component that has to play a role in it. And I have found more often than not, people aren't ready for it.
Yeah. So what, to make this really clear, because we've kind of been all over the place here, what are some of the signs that people should look for that signal that they are not ready for an elimination protocol?
Well, one, I think if you're not working with a professional, you're not ready for an elimination protocol. But that is one thing. And I think that that professional can be, you know, a psychotherapist or, you know, a clinical nutritionist or a really well-trained RD in elimination protocols. There are some out there that are trained in that, like, or an integrative functional physician would be a good one. So those are some options that are there. But I think also you have to kind of reflect and ask yourself a couple of questions. And And you have to reflect, and you also have to be really honest with yourself. And if you have a therapist that you're working with, these are really great things to discuss with your therapist. What is my motivation for starting this protocol? First and foremost, and that could be, we can justify that until we're blue in the face. But I think the truth is, if you're using words to yourself like clean up and
reset, detox, any of this,
any of those things that are coming up, those are triggering to me and saying this is being used in a way to kind of restrict, mm-hmm. not necessarily in a way in a therapeutic encouraging way. If you're using a motivation, if you're using like a protocol, one way that I think would be acceptable would be, I have X, Y, and Z symptoms, or I have this diagnosis that just came, like I just got diagnosed with, let's say, Hashimoto's or something like that. I'm not feeling great. I really want to try to see if I decrease my medications that I'm on as a result of this. I want to see what I can do nutritionally. That's a different perspective. But if you're using it for, I have Hashimoto's, and part of Hashimoto's is that you have a little extra weight, I'm going to do this elimination protocol in order to lose a little bit of weight, that I'm not into.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think also you have to ask yourself, like, well, this I kind of touched on already, but have I been diagnosed with anything? Have I been diagnosed with food sensitivities? Have I been diagnosed with an illness that would benefit from a therapeutic elimination protocol? And if you have, then you should be working with professional, period. Like that's how I look at it. Mm-hmm. But then also I think a major question that you need to ask yourself too is, do I have a history of this pattern? Do I have a history of restricting what I eat? Do I have a history of looking at my body in a way that I feel like food is the problem? And that I feel like my body isn't answering me or not doing what I quote unquote wanted to do. I think that there's a really, really thin line when we use elimination protocols between restrictive and disordered eating patterns. And it's vitally important, especially if you have a history of eating disorders, that you be honest with yourself when you're starting an elimination protocol.
Yeah. And really digging into what your why and like the deepest why is. Because like you said before, you know, we can reason it until we're blue in the face and say, you know, oh, I have acne and I have bloating and, you know, I'm having trouble sleeping and I have brain fog and all these other things. But if you're just using those as, you know, your surface examples, but really what you want to do is lose weight and get rid of all those things, it's a warning flag as a clinician.
Yeah, definitely. That's a warning sign for me too. And I think also you have to look at where you, elimination protocols, and especially some of the therapeutic ones like AIP, are not easy to implement. They're really difficult. You isolate yourself socially, you isolate yourself nutritionally, and you can isolate yourself emotionally too. In so many ways. So to me, those are serious things to consider when you're starting something off. And to be honest, I feel like you need to ask yourself, what are my current eating habits? What are those patterns looking like? And am I really set up for success if I'm going to start something like this?
Yeah. And I mean, that's why, like, to use a personal example, it is so important if you're going to do something like a therapeutically designed elimination protocol, like autoimmune or like any of these other things, that you're working with either like a naturopathic doctor or a nutritionist that is trained holistically and maybe a therapist at the same time. Because like personally, I was working with a naturopathic doctor, but I just decided to try and do a lot of these things myself when I was dealing with really like severe intestinal permeability from my celiac disease. And that also was resulted from an eating disorder and, you know, all this stuff. So I just thought, okay, like diet's the answer. So I did a combination, and I do not recommend that anyone ever do this, of the autoimmune protocol plus low FODMAP plus Whole30 at the same time.
Oh, I remember when you did this.
Yeah, for 3 months. And I think it was actually right before we started at Integrative Nutrition. And then
my mind was blown. I remember you telling me about it.
And it was,
oh my God.
Like my digestive symptoms got better. I lost a lot of weight during that time. And I, like Christina was saying, I could not eat out. I was so socially isolated that I got anxiety about basically leaving the house if I was going to have to eat at some point during the hours of me being outside of my house, because I was so terrified of eating anything that wasn't on my very restrictive list. And I definitely was depressed. I had anxiety. I had very high stress. And I think coming out of that, I was in worse shape than when I started, because even though my digestion was a little bit better, I definitely like starved off all of my gut bacteria. And I was also like, since I was so stressed, I was trying to put that energy into exercise, which is a horrible idea when you're doing like a therapeutic elimination diet, because that's one other thing we haven't really talked about yet. If your body is already overwhelmed by stress and inflammation from some kind of an autoimmune disease, and you're trying to do something for healing, beating the shit out of your body with exercise is not going to help you heal. It's going to make you worse, you know? And I just did not want to admit that to myself at the time. But, you know, obviously hindsight is 20/20, but that's why it's so important. Like, if I had been working with a doctor and a holistic nutritionist and a therapist at the same time, like, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now. We would have been having this conversation like years ago. So if you guessed it, that was the end of part one. So sit tight, and next week we will be back for the second part of the episode on elimination diets and therapeutic protocols, and talking about the warning signs and red flags that it might not be the best idea for you to do so. Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends, and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.